There must be thousands of individuals who are blessed with certain gifts when they come into the world. Unfortunately, very few of us ever develop those gifts. Mr. Booknight, you've done well. Thank you so much. There's an interesting passage in the book of Psalms, and I'm quite sure that many of us are familiar with some of the lines in this passage. Perhaps not all of them, perhaps all of it. Let me share this passage with you. 2 or 3 minutes, that's all. Quote, "When I consider the heavens and the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him? For thou hast crowned him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thine hands, and thou hast put all things under his feet." All things, mind you. Everything. All sheep and oxen and the beasts of the field, even the fowls of the air and the fish of the sea, and whatsoever passes through the paths of the seas. So what is man? What are you? What am I? To have dominion over all things on the face of the world? But you know, even if we were told what and who we are, and we have been, for hundreds of years, we have been told what our true nature really is. Not human, but divine. And for hundreds of years, we have questioned and resisted and denied this truth. Just look around you. Look at how we live. Look at what is happening to hundreds of thousands of people all over the world. Does it look at all that we have dominion over anything? As a matter of fact, around 2,000 years ago, a man came telling us that he had many things to say to us, but that there were some of us, many of us, it turned out, in fact, that would not be able to understand, much less accept. He assured everyone who was willing to listen that even he could, you know, even though he could do mighty things, heal the sick and feed the hungry and even raise the dead, he said that these were merely baby steps compared to what could be accomplished by any of us. He said, even greater things than these shall you do. And we think about it. What could be greater than raising the dead? He went so far as to say one day that God was his father, making himself equal with God. But then he turns right around and says, God is your father, our father. Years later, Paul came around and said that we had yet to see and hear, quote, the things that God has ordained. Interesting statements, aren't they? The question for us is, dare we take them at face value? Throughout the Bible, we are told that man is always in a state of unfolding, evolving in something greater than what is evident at the moment. We are told that when the Spirit of truth is come, that this Spirit, it is not some ghost floating around in the ethers. It's an awareness. It is an activity in consciousness. Jesus said that when this activity is realized in consciousness, that this activity, this Christ, this Father within, would guide us unto all truth. By whatever name, this Spirit that is to come does not come from out here, but from within. For it is ever with us and in us, at all times and in every place, saying, "Behold, I continue to stand at the door of your consciousness and knock and knock and knock, waiting to be let in." This morning, it really doesn't matter how we say it, the answer to your prayers, the fulfilling of your dreams, the solution to your problem, all of these things are added unto us in proportion as we become aware of our divinity. It can happen this morning, this afternoon, tomorrow, whether we call it the Spirit of truth that is to come, by whatever name, it is the spiritual reality of our nature. This Spirit, this Comforter, this is the spiritual reality of our being. This truth, this Christ, so many names for the same thing. This is the true nature of our being. This is what makes each one of us, you and me, the light of the world. Literally the sons and daughters of God Himself. And it is the awakening of this truth in individual consciousness. It is our own conscious awareness of our divinity while in this body, as an intimate realization. This is what we're all about. Discovering our destiny. Not unlike Jesus. For this cause came you and I into the world, to bear witness to this truth. And in the process, where you happen to be a teacher or a lawyer or a salesman, whatever, that's what we do. As we work at bearing witness to this truth. Just about every Bible in the world reminds us there is but one source, one substance out of which all things are made, and that nothing is made that is not made out of this source, this substance. One Father of us all. What this means is that you're not a physical being and never have been, but an individualized expression of God Himself. Even as we sit here this morning, what has been said for dozens and dozens of years from this very pulpit and from the classrooms downstairs and in the office by our teachers and practitioners and ministers, consciousness is the instrument through which the spiritual reality of life is made manifest. Consciousness is the key. What you and I see out here is nothing more and nothing less than what you and I have chosen to behold in mind. As the Catholic brother Angelus once said, and I keep bringing it up because it is so true, that we become what we behold in mind. God, if we behold God, or dust, if we behold dust. As a matter of fact, in the book of Genesis, we are told to look to the north and to the south and to the east and to the west. The land which thou seest, to thee will I give it. How many times have we been asked from this pulpit, what are you seeking? What are you looking at? This is why we say over and over again, as in mind, so in manifestation. As within, so without. If you take the classes, you'll discover that there is a divine science textbook, the very basic class, that says that we cannot separate a thought from the mind that thinks it. It's impossible. The two are one and the same. And in the very same way, man is inseparable from the God that fills heaven and earth, the invisible realms of life. For in him we live and move and have our being. A God that is forever saying, I am, and beside me there is none else. All things are made of me. There are certain religions that are waiting for the Christ to reappear. But the Christ is here. For it's always been in you and in me, and appearing in your life and in my life, according to what we behold in mind. There is no Christ, there is no truth, there is no God that will ever appear in your life or in my life, separate and apart from any of us. If not within, never without. This entire creative process that we've been talking about over the past 4 or 5 minutes, this process is a never-ending, ongoing process. It is a state of unfoldment. In other words, the entire evolution from an ordinary, imperfect human being to the perfection of the soul is as natural and as orderly, and it is as harmonious as the unfolding of a rose, petal by petal. You don't rush it. You don't agonize over it. We just practice living the truth that we understand. Back in June, maybe in May, beginning in May, on the radio and on television and just about in every newspaper all over the world, all we heard were stories about Nelson Mandela, the former president of South Africa, and his state of health. All the headlines were proclaiming that the end was near. And as a result of those eminent news at the time, there were dozens of related stories that appeared about the difficult times during the apartheid. As a matter of fact, a journalist, a native-born African, who was a child during the years that apartheid was practiced, this particular individual who became a journalist wrote an article that appeared in the New York Times, I'm talking about 2 months ago, maybe even three. And he wrote, when we grew up, it was the color of our skins that defined us. The color of our skin determined who we were, where we lived, and what it was that we were supposed to be. He wrote, in fact, the limitations imposed on us by apartheid were false ceilings. For all the while, the sky was the limit. Think about it. Apartheid in South Africa supposedly ended almost 20 years ago. But it hasn't gone away. It's very much alive. Not only in South Africa, but all over the world. It's alive in our homes. Are you aware that we practice apartheid with our family members? And with our colleagues at work? And with our neighbors in the communities in which we live? We define people by how old they are. We define people by where they live and where they work, and by the education they have, and by their states of health, physical health, mental health, emotional health. And we have a tendency to put people in little boxes, and then we keep them there. Instead of skin color, we judge by appearances. We define people by how much money they have. And we determine what their lives are to be by their degrees and titles and credentials. We often remind people never to forget their place in life. And so it is that we remind them constantly of their weaknesses, of their shortcomings, of their past indiscretions. Not unlike the native-born Africans, we put them in boxes and we leave them there. We don't allow them to grow and to develop and to mature and to move onward and forward and upwards. Do we do this with our mates, our family members, our children? A philosopher once noted that if we were to examine the egg of a caterpillar, we would find it filled with a fluid. But there is nothing in that fluid that gives the slightest hint of a caterpillar, much less a butterfly. But it's there, in that fluid. Even though there is no indication whatsoever. What did Paul say? Now we see through a glass darkly. In other words, right now we cannot see the spiritual reality of who we are and what we are. For now we only know in part. Keep in mind that the idea of a form or an appearance is always present in mind long before it is brought out here in the open. The sanctuary, we've said so often. The sanctuary was an idea, an invisible idea in someone's mind before it became embodied as this building. In the very same way, you and I were created as living souls. This is what is made in the image and likeness of God Himself, already perfect, already whole, already complete, but not yet in consciousness, but in process. Not unlike the butterfly in the fluid. Not yet visible, but in the process of unfolding. As a matter of fact, your presence here this morning indicates that a stirring has already taken place within your own soul, an understanding, an awakening, faint as it may be. That there is a relationship between you and God. This is nothing new, for this understanding is already embedded within your own soul. Your divinity already exists, as Robert Browning tried to explain. Truth is within ourselves, he wrote. It is a matter of opening out a way so that this imprisoned splendor may escape. Whatever your hurts, your disappointments, your angers, your rejections, your frustrations, no matter how many times you and I fail to live as the man or woman we were meant to be, You and I are always a child of God. There is nothing that any of us can do to deny this truth. If a butterfly were to see itself only as a caterpillar and judge by appearances, oh, he'll probably look for the nearest hole, crawl in, and hope to die. What butterfly would like to look like a caterpillar? Which is what many of us do when we look at ourselves in a mirror. Or every time we look at our resumes. Or where we stand in the social and financial order of things. There are those who say to themselves, I'm fat and old and ugly and can never make right decisions. I do not have an education. I might as well give up. There are those who look at their environment and see what a mess they live in. A divorce, a broken home, unemployment, nothing to look forward to. They too may very well find a hole and crawl in and hope to die. It is when we begin to change the focus of our attention. When we stop looking north, south, east, and west to the hurts and fears and shames and guilts and begin turning to that which is holy and sacred in the midst of us, to the soul of our being. It is a silence. And that's where the awakening takes place. We're not here to suffer. We're not here to hurt. Or to be without. Contrary to some religious teachings, do not ever believe that the more you suffer, the closer to God you're getting. That's not true at all. There is no virtue in suffering. I think it is so sad to see people punish themselves by denying joy and love and happiness in their lives. I've shared this story before that I've seen people, I've witnessed people, crawling on their knees, bleeding and in pain, in the hope that God will notice and bless them for what they are doing in His honor. There is no such God. It's nothing more than religious superstitions. And there are those who deprive themselves because their church tells them to. They deprive themselves of music and dance and laughter, all in the hope of finding favor with God. Let me share a little story with you. About a month ago, 3 weeks ago, I was at a restaurant where we eat rather regularly. We happen to know just about all of the servers there. And it just so happened that a server who waits on us rather frequently welcomed us and said to us, right even before we sat down, boy, did I get in trouble yesterday. And of course we looked at him like, what did you do now? He said, last night I waited on this gentleman who came in with three ladies. He looked like a minister. He was wearing a three-piece black suit. He had a gold chain around his neck, hanging on the outside of the suit, and he had a huge crucifix that was hanging on that chain. And he said, and at least two of the three ladies that were with him had Bibles in their hands. He said, they looked so serious. He said, they were rather in their late 60s, maybe 70s. They look very serious. He said, in retrospect, perhaps they were coming from a funeral or a wake, but that didn't enter my mind at the time. But he said, I tried to lighten things up, and I looked at the gentleman and I said to him, it's so nice to see you again. But these are not the same ladies you had last night. He said, boy, you should have seen the look on their faces. All three of them got up and they started saying, where's the manager? He said, so I showed them who the manager was, and they went out there and they raised all kind of a ruckus and they walked out very angry. He said, I really thought I was going to lose my job. The manager was pretty upset at me. He thought it was funny. I did too. We laughed. God is love in action. God is joy in expression. God is happiness made visible. He takes no pleasure in your hurt or your suffering. It is written that he takes no pleasure in your dying. Nothing contrary to love has anything to do with God. Nothing at all. With any facet of the human condition, don't touch it, leave it alone. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. The people of 2,000 years ago, not unlike the people of today, individually as well as collectively, they all pray for someone or something to come and take them out of whatever predicament they find themselves in. Everyone is looking for a way out, an answer to the particular problem. There were thousands of people who go to church, and it doesn't matter what church they go to. They read books about God and Jesus and Allah and Muhammad. They read about Ramadan and Easter and Christmas, and then they discuss with one another what it is that they know. And when the time comes to prove the truth that they know, you know what many of them do? They do what the disciples did when Jesus left. They let their emotions take over. Fear, anger, disgust. And then they go right back to the things that they used to do before. And once again, they become staunch Catholics or traditional Baptists or Orthodox Jews. They become very religious once again. I say to you this morning, there is no need to know more truth anymore. So don't buy any more books. Don't buy any more tapes. Practice living the truth that you already know. I'm sorry, Clarence. Clarence is the fellow that sells the books and the tapes. Practice. Just practice. That's all we need to do. There is a perfection which you that is in you already. It already knows what to do. Isn't it written, know ye not that ye are the temple of God? That the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? You are the fluid in that egg. And the butterfly is in you. That butterfly is your Savior. That butterfly is the answer to your prayers. That butterfly is the fulfilling of your dreams. Saying, seek me with all of your heart and all of your mind and all of your strength, and I will be found of you. Be still, it is saying. Just be still and know that I am God. So we make this lesson practical. Will you now join me for our closing meditation? And we can begin by becoming still. By realizing that the only reason God is not alive in our lives is because we've chosen to place our attention on the things of the world. But right now, this moment, we don't have to do that. All we need to do is become still. All we need to do is to take no thought for the things of the world. Not even for the peace of our minds or the health of our bodies. For it is the activity of the realized Christ that manifests as peace and love and fulfillment. Let us be still. For the glimmers of this truth, for the stirring of the Father within, for the Spirit of God as it moves in me and all about me. For this blessing, O most gracious God, we give you thanks. Yes. It is the indwelling God that blesses you and keeps you. It is the Father within that shines His love upon you and His graces unto you. It is the Spirit that lifts your consciousness and gives you peace. Amen.